Hello. Nina, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. Okay, I believe we are live.
Okay.
So, hold on just a minute here.
Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Get ready to be the best you can be. Stay tuned for the Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules.
Well, good evening. Welcome to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules, coming to you from very warm Southern California on this Father's Day weekend. I'd like to wish all the fathers listening today a happy, happy Father's Day. And today we have Nina Amir with us, and she's going to be talking about the Law of Attraction and Judaism, or Kabbalah. It's really quite fascinating, so stay tuned. You're going to love every second of it. And I just wanted to mention, before I bring Nina out, that next week we have Jill Bolt Taylor, Ph.D., with us. Dr. Taylor is the brain scientist affiliated with Indiana University School of Medicine in Indianapolis, and she's going to be talking about her own personal experience with having a massive stroke at the age of 37. Now, this is really incredible for a brain scientist to be talking about her own personal experience. You know, the information that we got from this is just incredible. Anyway, she's going to be sharing her very, very incredible story that's in her new book, The Stroke of Insight. Now, I'm sure many listeners have actually seen her video on YouTube, and she's been on Oprah all over. So you may be asking, well, how does this apply to the Law of Attraction? Well, it's very simple. It's all in the brain. I know you're going to find out some really incredible scientific stuff on how our minds work, revealing how our thoughts really, really do create our reality. Anyway, tune in for next week's show. You're going to absolutely love it. And then just another reminder that next Saturday is the Gathering of One. Please go to the website, thegatheringofone.com, and get information on where you can go to participate in this most incredible experience. They have got places all over the world. It's really incredible. Take part in this because it is just another huge process in the ascension. It's just incredible. We're going to be ushering in the golden age of peace, and it's just a very high energy awakening for you. So I urge everybody to go and have a wonderful time. And now let's get on with tonight's show. Nina Amir is a seasoned journalist, a Jewish inspirational speaker, spiritual and Kabbalistic conscious creation coach, teacher, and the regular holiday and spirituality expert on Conversations with Mrs. Claus, and who happens to be a friend of ours. She holds a B.A. in magazine journalism from Syracuse University. Through her writing and speaking, Amir offers practical spiritual tools from a Jewish perspective, although her work is pertinent to people of all faiths and spiritual traditions. Welcome, Nina, to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Thanks so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm so glad you are. You know, I've always wondered about Kabbalah because, of course, we hear from many celebrities like Madonna wearing the red string around her wrist, and I actually started doing some research, about a year ago on Kabbalah, because I don't know why, I wanted to learn more. So I'm delighted that you, Nina, are my special guest tonight. you can imagine my surprise that when I found out that Kabbalah or Judaism has actually been teaching the law of attraction.
Well,
there is a law of attraction associated with it.
I was surprised too, I have to tell you. So I was pleasantly surprised, so I'm very excited to tell you about it.
Oh, great. Well, tell us, how did you begin writing and speaking about the law of attraction from a Jewish mystical perspective?
Well, yeah, I was raised Jewish, but my family wasn't very observant at all, except of the major Jewish holidays. And I didn't even receive much of a Jewish education as a child, but I grew up with a really strong Jewish identity. Yeah, despite that, I found that Judaism was sort of lacking, and I thought it needed what I called something more, which was a spiritual element. So in my 20s, I began a personal spiritual journey outside of Judaism, and I joined, you know, along with everybody else, the New Age movement, and I began doing all sorts of human potential classes and personal growth workshops and studying metaphysics, and I became a rebirther and a voice dialogue facilitator, and I learned how to read tarot cards, and I did all that kind of stuff. And then along the way, I had several teachers who taught me a lesson that I kept hearing repeated in other circles and in workshops and classes and in books, and I still hear it till today. And they told me, your thoughts are creative, something I know that you've heard too.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept telling me that if you combine your thoughts with your feelings, that you can manifest your desires. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really believed that that was true, and I practiced it as best I could over the years with some success. And then in my 30s, I happened to learn a little something about Jewish mysticism, or Kabbalah, which is correctly pronounced Kabbalah, although nobody ever pronounces it that way. Even most Jews don't pronounce it that way, but that's the correct pronunciation. It is Kabbalah.
Mm.
So that's probably how you hear me say it.
Okay.
And I became really interested, and I began to study this mystical tradition. And it eventually reconnected me with my Jewish roots. And what happened was that through my study of Kabbalah, I discovered that most of what I had learned and that I really knew to be true from other secular areas of spiritual practice were encompassed within Kabbalah. So I became a more serious student of Jewish mysticism, although I'm by no means a Kabbalist or a scholar of Jewish mysticism. But I did become a real student of it. And I began doing a little sharing of what I learned in Kabbalah study groups that I was leading. And it wasn't long before I wanted to know, of course, if the idea of creative thought or law of attraction was included within Jewish mysticism. And after a little looking, I discovered that it was.
Mm.
And it wasn't taught much or even discussed much, but it was there. And even some of the best-loved and well-known teachers from long, long ago had mentioned things like that we should be careful what we think, because we become what we think.
Mm-hmm.
And what was discussed quite often, though, was that, in the Jewish mystical writings, was the fact that letters have certain qualities and energies. In fact, the Kabbalists considered the letters of the Hebrew alphabet the building blocks of creation, and that words have a creative nature. So Judaism places a lot of emphasis on the fact that words are creative. And in the Old Testament, or Torah, or the Bible, they say that God created the world using words. You know, God spoke, and the world came into being. God said, let there be light, and there was light. And that's the traditional biblical creation story. It all happened with words. But words, of course, make up our thoughts. And spoken words are seen to have more power and energy than our thoughts that we simply keep in our head. So God spoke the world into being. So I took all of this stuff into consideration, and I began to really research and to read, and I came up with my own theories about how the idea of creative thought and conscious creation and law of attraction all fit within the teachings of Kabbalah. And I created what I can call a Kabbalistic conscious creation methodology, if you will, and I based it on the Kabbalistic story of creation, which is a little different than the one in the Bible, and I began writing and teaching about it.
Mm. So your teachings are directed or pertinent to Jews and non-Jews alike, huh?
Yes, they are.
Mm.
They are.
And do you, do most Jews believe in the law of attraction?
I don't think that most Jews know anything about the law of attraction.
Ah.
Unless they are reading secular books about the law of attraction.
Mm-hmm. Unless they go out and see The Secret.
Right, or they read something by Wayne Dyer,
right,
or, you know, something like that. Then I don't think they do. But, you know, I think that they know more about it than they think they do.
Uh-huh.
Because if they're studying Kabbalah, and they know the Kabbalist's views on letters and words and thoughts or even intention, they're going to have an intrinsic knowledge of how the law of attraction works.
Mm.
But they're not going to call it the law of attraction.
Right.
They wouldn't have a name for it at all, I don't think. I think they would simply discuss the fact that there's this idea that letters and words and thoughts are creative in nature and that it exists within the Jewish mystical teacher, you know, teachings. You know, I think that everywhere I've gone, I was always seen as, you know, in synagogues and things like that, I'm always seen as the woo-woo lady. And even though...
The woo-woo lady.
I'm the
woo-woo.
Weird one. So, yeah, I'm the one who's way out there.
Yeah, on another planet. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I know. We've all been there.
Right. So, you know, I'm that woo-woo lady. But I went to someone very well-respected, a man named Rabbi David Cooper, who has written many books and put out many CDs. He wrote a book called God is a Verb that's been very well respected. He teaches Kabbalah. And I asked him before I even began on this journey with this book I'm writing, you know, and I said, is this worth doing? You know, is this a valid premise that I have? And he said, yes, this is well worth pursuing. So, you know, I may be opening myself up to having the whole Jewish world think the woo-woo lady, but, you know, what can I say?
Yeah, really. Well, you've written a short book called, how do you say that, Kabbalah?
It's Kabbalah.
Kabbalah of Conscious Creation, How to Manifest Your Physical and Spiritual Desires, formerly called
Abracadabra.
Thank you. So tell us about that.
Okay. I would love to. The Kabbalah of Conscious Creation will actually be the first book to use the Jewish mystical creation story as the model for manifesting physical and spiritual desires and a consciousness that receives for the sake of giving. The easiest way to explain its premise is probably to describe it this way. If you could journey back to a time before time when all that existed was God, and experience the Creator manifesting the world for the purpose of showering it with divine gifts, you'd learn that by mimicking God's creative behavior, or behaving like God, you can become a powerful creator, a receiver, and a giver.
Mm.
And during that process, creator and created, giver and receiver, once again become one.
Mm.
Because you see, Julie, the Kabbalistic creation story doesn't happen the same way as the Bible says creation happened. What the Kabbalists say is that before the beginning, God, they called God Ein Sof, which means without end or infinite.
Mm-hmm.
So Ein Sof, or this infinite being, felt a desire to create something else for the express purpose of giving this creation divine goodness. But since Ein Sof was everywhere and everything, it had to contract and create a void or a space into which something else could exist. So Ein Sof then focused divine energy in the form of a beam of light into that void, where it passed, this energy passed through five stages of creation. The first one was called Adam Kadmon, which was a blueprint for creation and the repository for what I would call the soul's purpose. So each of us, our soul's purpose would be in this place.
Mm-hmm.
And then the light went through four what they call worlds. They're stages of creation. And the worlds have Hebrew names, but more simply, they would be, well, I'll give you both. So the first world is Atzilut, which is the world of being. And then it went through the next one, which is Briah, the world of thinking. And then Yetzirah, the world of feeling, and Asiyah, the world of doing. And when the process was complete, the physical world and human beings, the vessels that were meant to receive this divine goodness, were created, were made manifest. So what my book says is that when humans, who were created in God's image, following God's divine footsteps, follow this creation process that God went through, and apply the divine creative process to our own conscious creation process, that we can also make our desires manifest. So as you can see, you know, when you asked me before, is Kabbalah or, you know, my teaching pertinent to Jew and non-Jew alike? Of course it is. This is something that anyone can do. And Kabbalah, you know, has always had universal appeal, and non-Jews have written books about Kabbalah. Non-Jews read books about Kabbalah, and tarot cards are based on Kabbalah. And like you mentioned, you know, celebrities, Madonna and Demi Moore, all these people are going to the Kabbalah Center. You know, they're obviously getting something out of the Jewish mystical teachings. But here we're looking at, you know, how did the Kabbalists say God created the world? And if we're created in God's image, can we do the same thing?
Yeah, so we can do the same thing. And so you have 10 steps, though.
Well, there were 10 steps in the original book. The new version, the Kabbalah of Conscious Creation, How to Mystically Manifest Your Physical and Spiritual Desires, has only 7.
Oh, okay.
So the first one, do you want me to go through them now, or you want me to talk about how they correspond to the law of attraction? Or
yeah, that would be great. Yeah, how do they correspond to the law of attraction?
Well, steps 3 and 4 in the process really correspond to law of attraction, because I gave you a lot of information there in one go. But the two worlds, thinking and feeling, those really do correspond the most directly, because when you enter the world of thinking, that's, of course, where we focus our thoughts on what we desire, right? That's what we want to manifest. So in the law of attraction terms, and that's where we're doing just that. We focus on what we want. And we develop a clear and concise thought of what we want to create. In the world of feeling, we're combining that focused thought with the feeling of having what we desire right here and now. We imagine what it would be like to have manifested it in physical form, and we allow ourselves to enjoy that experience, even though we haven't actually created that desire right, you know, yet.
Mm-hmm.
So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So the other steps, I mean, if we go through the whole process, we begin with Adam Kadmon, which, as I said, was the blueprint for all creation, or in this case, it's our soul's purpose. So what I ask people to do is to first, you know, I want them to discover their soul's purpose, which would be their unique talent or gift, or how they're going to bring that into the world. So whatever it is they want to create, it's better if they create it from a place of being in touch with their soul's purpose, because when they do that, they're creating things that are coming from that soul's purpose. We're manifesting, and that helps us manifest our desires more easily. They're fitting into sort of a divine plan, and we then take them into physical form, you know, almost, I don't want to say miraculously, but it's more easy because it's easier because they're coming from this place of real purpose.
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we, you know, and plus that's the place where the spark of divinity resides. So there's a connection to God, and we want to begin creating from that kind of place. So that's the first step. And then, did you have a question?
Yeah, so that's where you connect to God. Is there a particular way that you connect to God?
Well, there's a meditation I use. So when I work, like if I teach class or in the book, there's a meditation, and I'm going to have a CD that will be coming out with a meditation. But that's how I work with people. Like when I do the coaching, I work with people using the meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So we go through the stages of creation, and so we spend some time there. And you can ask, you know, I also have worksheets and things like that. So we can ask questions about, you know, what is it that's your unique talent, or, you know, how can you, what do you feel is your way of serving? those type of things? Or do you have a special ability, or do you feel called to do something? So we spend some time in that place to try to get in touch with what is our purpose here, and what is that special talent we have that we can give to the world, that we can create from. And sometimes we need something that isn't from there. Sometimes we just need a car.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
But if we need more money, let's say, we need more income, if we can find a way to create that income that comes from our soul's purpose, it's going to be easier.
Absolutely.
So
And much more rewarding, too.
That's right. That's right, because we're going to feel on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much better to do that. But also even the car, if the car is getting us to our job or helping us get our kids where they need to go, or, you know, somehow fulfilling our purpose as a parent or whatever, if we can see how that's all flowing back to that place, it's going to be much easier to create it.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Right. So then from there, we go to the second step in the process, and that's taking them into the world, or the stage of creation, which comes before the world of thinking, and that's the world of being. And here they're still really close to God. This is a place where we all try to get to when we meditate. So we want to get to this place of being connected to God or having a spiritual experience, and that's this place of being. This is the world of being, where we can just be. This is the place where we can also allow in our creation. So in law of attraction terms, we want to be able to come back here when we're having trouble receiving what we want to create. Because at this stage of the process, we want to access the world of being. At this early stage, we want to access the world of being because it's the place where inspiration and desire are born. So once we know our soul's purpose, we want to feel the inspiration and the desire to create something new, to bring something new into the world that comes out of the soul's purpose. And we do that in this world of being. So we simply feel the desire, and we get a sense or a picture of what that desire will look like in the physical world. And we do that while we're still coming from this place of divine connection. But we can also come back here, and I'll talk about that a little later, but we can come back to this world of being through meditation and that sort of thing so that we can open ourselves up again to receive.
Okay.
And then, as I mentioned, the third and fourth steps move us into the worlds of thinking and feeling. So we focus our thought, then, you know, we move into the world of thinking, where now we feel that we've felt inspired to create something new, and we now focus on what that is. We focus our thoughts, and we put our thoughts into actual, you know, we create words that become a thought, and we focus on exactly what it is. We get very specific with our words and our thoughts about what it is we want to create. And once we have that clear, concise thought, then we move into the world of feeling. So that's the fourth step. We move into the world of feeling, where we take that thought and we combine it with the feeling of having it right now, which your listeners should be very familiar with.
Yeah, definitely.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Right. Then, at that point, we move into the fifth step. And I think this is sometimes forgotten when we're talking about the law of attraction, or at least I've found with some of what I've read and heard in the law of attraction, I think it's sometimes it's forgotten. And I think it requires in this world, in the fifth world, it requires taking inspired action. And that's in the world of doing. So this fifth world is the world of doing, or the world of action. And we actually do something to help bring our desire into physical form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we live in a physical world that's governed by physical laws, and effort tends to bring forth results.
Right.
So on a spiritual level, the Kabbalists also believe that effort made a difference in the spiritual realms. And that means that the effort we make, even by combining our thought and feeling, because that takes an effort, it has an effect in the upper world. So they said something, that they had this phrase, as above, so below. But it can be reversed, as below, so above. So the idea of attracting what we want, in their view, would actually be one of drawing it to us. So we're attracting or drawing what we want And what we want, we do that vis-a-vis our effort.
So, okay, so the effort, you're talking about divine inspiration to go on the action, right?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we just have action we know we have to do, right? I mean, maybe we have a goal in mind, we want to create something, and there are things we know will help us get there. But it's best, the process works best, if we have come up with inspired actions, actions that we feel really inspired to take.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay.
Got it.
And then whatever we're doing on the physical plane is going to achieve a response above, is the way the Kabbalists would look at it. And that response is then going to draw something down to us in the physical realm. So it's going to attract something to us.
Okay.
Okay? So then that moved us through Adam Kadmon, the soul's purpose, and the four worlds, as the Kabbalists see it. And then we go even a step farther. So that was five steps. Then we go a step farther, and we learn how to become good receivers. So this is the, you know, again, sort of the allowing part. We become good receivers, and we allow in what we desire. We acknowledge and we accept what we've created. But in Kabbalistic terms, this has to do with fulfilling a divine purpose. So the way the Kabbalists see it is that God is the giver. As we go back to that creation story, remember God wanted to give
mm-hmm.
and created receivers, and we are the receivers. So we have to receive to fulfill our purpose. And when we receive, we take the seventh step, and that's the final step, and we actually become givers in the process by sharing what we've created with others. And so we go a bit further, and we not only receive, but we give, and then we make the giving a spiritual giving. So let me take this even a little further for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know when you give someone a gift, and they accept it, and they like it?
Mm-hmm.
You feel kind of warm and fuzzy, right?
Right.
It feels good to give. So the Kabbalists said that when we receive gifts from God, when we allow in what we created, that we actually give God pleasure. So remember that God created the world to give us goodness and abundance and all the things we want. So since God simply wanted to give us the pleasure of receiving, when we receive, we become givers ourselves, because when we receive, we are accepting the gift that God's giving us, and God gets that warm, fuzzy feeling. So when that happens, we achieve what they called, the Kabbalists called, an affinity of form with our Creator, which in other words, in simpler terms, means we become like God. We become one with the source of all creation. We
mm-hmm.
become one with the Creator. And when we do that, I think we tap into the divine flow of giving and receiving. I think it becomes one and the same. So the giving and the receiving, if they're all one, that's when, to me, the law of attraction or conscious creation happens miraculously. I think that when we're totally tapped in, when we're one with the Creator, the ultimate Creator, we create.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I think it happens. That's how the steps work.
Very interesting. It's logical. It does make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
You say that we need to move beyond our mundane desires and manifest a new consciousness. What do you mean by this?
Well, you know, typically we tend to focus on receiving for ourselves alone. And I don't want to make that sound really terrible, but it's true. We're focused on our own desires, and with good reason. First of all, from, you know, a Jewish mystical standpoint, it's our nature as pure receivers to desire things for ourselves. You know, God created us to receive, so we have desires and we're meant to receive. Plus, in this physical world where we live and exist, we often, you know, more often than not, feel we have unfulfilled desires and needs, real honest needs. We need money. We need a roof over our head. We need to feed our families. We, you know, need a car to get from here to there. You know, more often than not, we feel like we need to receive more.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, while it's all well and good to want all this stuff in the physical world, what the Kabbalists teach is that these desires, these physical desires for things and stuff, will never make us happy. They say that even the fulfillment of these desires won't bring us real joy and peace, especially since every fulfilled desire is followed by another one. We always have a new desire to be filled.
Mm-hmm.
So we're taught that they actually say that we'll die with half our desires still unfulfilled. So, you know, we're just always besieged by new desires. And the fulfillment of material desires also doesn't open us up to the true flow of goodness and pleasure God wants to shower on us, upon us. So we have to change what we desire. And that's what they teach. We have to develop a desire for something different. We have to desire a new desire. We have to want to manifest a desire to receive not for ourselves alone, but for the sake of giving unconditionally to others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the new consciousness. It's a consciousness that thinks less of receiving for the self and more for the sake of others. And what they say is that only when we manifest this new consciousness will we truly be happy. But to really open ourselves fully to the flow of goodness and pleasure that we're supposed to be able to receive, we have to take that consciousness even farther and get back to the idea of giving pleasure to God. We have to put God, you know, the way I like to look at it is we have to put God back in the picture. And we have to receive not for ourselves alone and not simply for the sake of giving unconditionally to others, but for the sake of giving God pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to just say one thing, because people always say, you know, oh, but that's like having, you know, this God sitting on a throne with a long white beard. And, you know, we've kind of gotten beyond that idea of God as a person.
Mm-hmm.
That receive, you know, so how can we have this God who receives pleasure when we receive his or her gifts? But I simply like to think of it as God, as doing God's work, or of serving God like karma yoga,
mm-hmm.
or as a way of fulfilling our divine purpose, or of looking at it like healing the world, or in Jewish terms, they think of it as raising holy sparks back to their source. So it puts a different light on what we're creating. And I think that's the idea, that we want to look at what we're creating as, you know, not just more stuff. And when that happens, when we create with that intention of having God in the picture, we tap into that divine flow of abundance, the divine flow of giving and receiving that are happening simultaneously.
Mm. Very good. Well, should we only focus on giving to others unconditionally and forget about our desire to receive anything for ourselves? I mean, is that what is going to make us happy?
No, because they're both important to the process.
Mm.
You know, you have to do both because we were made as receivers. We have to do that part too. So I like to put it into electronic terms. You know, we're such an electronic society.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of God like a power source and humans like electronic pieces of equipment. So if we, the pieces of equipment, don't receive, so if we don't allow in the electrical current, we short-circuit the system. We sort of send the electricity back to source where it goes zzz, and that probably wouldn't feel too good. At that end, right? At source's end. I mean, we know what happens when it goes into the wall like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We get smoke and stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's not usually very good. So the flow of electricity would be stopped at our end and sent back, which would cause that short circuit at that end. Which, you know, it wouldn't feel good at either end. It wouldn't feel good at our end. It wouldn't feel good at the wall. It wouldn't feel good at the machine. And our equipment wouldn't run too well, if at all. And it wouldn't receive what it needs. And at the other end, at source's end, the electricity's end, the source would remain unlimited. There'd still be all that electricity. And its energy could be resent to our machine, but the circuitry along the way would eventually become damaged if we kept sending the energy back. So by only giving and not receiving, it seems to me that eventually our equipment would run out of power.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you imagine that we're a machine that not only has an electric plug but also a battery, like kind of like one of your, like my clock radio,
mm-hmm.
you know, it has a battery, so if electricity goes out, my alarm still rings. So if we were like that, a machine with a battery source as well as an electric source, eventually the battery would also run out of energy. So we'd find ourselves lacking what we need most if we never received. You know,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't have that abundant flow of energy. So without the energy, our machine couldn't function. So it couldn't provide a service to others, and that's what we want to be doing. It couldn't give. So for the cosmic formula to work, the giver has to give, and the receiver has to receive, even when it's giving.
So one of the questions that is real tough for people, how do you get to the point where you can actually allow something to come into your life? I mean, we get to the point where we know what we want, we believe we're going to get it, we even give because we're so confident that we're going to get. But one of the blocks for that I hear about all the time is that people don't know how to get out of the way to allow that to come to them.
Yeah, that's an issue, you know, and in this system it's the same. You have to work on, you know, what I talk about is working on becoming a good container. You have to, because in Kabbalistic terms, we talk about being a vessel, that God, there's a lot of talk about vessels and the light coming into the vessels, and so you want to be a good vessel. You want to build a strong and large container for all this goodness that's supposed to flow your way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same kind of issue. You have to keep asking yourself what's underneath, that's, you know, underneath your conscious thoughts that are blocking you. I mean, it's the same issues of self-worth and...
Same self-esteem issues would be blocking you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that, you know, just because I'm talking about in Jewish mystical terms, I don't think it changes what the blocks that we all have.
Uh-huh.
I think it all comes down to that, to, you know, why am I unworthy, you know, do I feel guilty? But there is an idea about this separation that happens. There's an idea about us feeling separate from God, and that's something that blocks us.
Mm.
And it comes from feeling that God is the giver and that we're the receiver, and never the twain shall meet. And if you become a giver, you become like God, and therefore you're one and the same, and you remove that separation. They talk about there being the suffering of separation. And when we remove that separation from God, then there's no more suffering. And it allows us to become better receivers.
Give us some examples of giving.
Of giving?
Mm-hmm. Like, in order to give, like, you want to be connected with God. What do you give back to God?
Well, the way I look at it is, like in my own life, I look at giving in a variety of ways. I give through my work, because whatever I find that works in my life that helps me be close to God, or that helps me create in my life, or that helps my children, or anything like that, I give through my writing and my teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I give it back to other people.
Mm-hmm.
I look at how I give to my children. So for instance, if I were to, let's say I needed a new car, I look at how I'm going to give with that car. So maybe I'm not willing to pick up a hitchhiker, but am I giving with the car in terms of getting my children to activities that help them fulfill their life's purpose? or am I bringing meals to the needy?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because even a couple months ago we had a gentleman on Give a Dollar Away a Day.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where he would just drop a dollar and just let somebody come pick it up. He would be out of the way. He'd be hiding from them. Because that was his way of giving back so that he could be open enough to receive.
Mm-hmm. I always give money. You know, when the people, if I'm driving and I'm at a light and there's someone asking for money, I always give.
Yeah, I do too. It just gives me a wonderful feeling.
Right. I come out of the grocery store, there's somebody there asking for money, even for whatever charity, I always give.
Yeah.
Even if it's just whatever change is in my pocket, I give it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, just whatever way that I can. Sometimes I don't have the time to go, you know, give time, but I just give whatever way I can. And whatever I'm trying to create, I'm always looking at it as how will it, you know, how can I use it to give? And that's part of this process, is you have to look at how, you know, whatever it is you're going to create, how can you use it to give back?
How will it benefit others?
That's right. How does it benefit others?
Yeah, I think that is really, really neat. And often the missing link in movies such as, you know, The Secret and many other things.
Well, I noticed that, you know, after The Secret came out, there were a lot of books that came out afterwards that criticized that. You know, Neil Donald Walsh's book, Happier Than God, said something about it. I can't remember. There was something else I read or heard. A lot of people I talked to criticized The Secret for not being very spiritual or being too materialistic. And
yeah.
There just was not enough focus on that. And it's not that the principles in The Secret weren't correct. You know what I mean? They work.
Yeah, they just didn't go far enough into the realm of how you can be emotionally happy.
Right, and how to tie it in on a spiritual level.
Exactly. And that's probably, beyond anything else, that is the most important thing about the law of attraction. It is a spiritual way of thinking. It's just not about getting those material items. And yeah, you use those material items as proof that it is in existence. It is there. It is an actual universal law. But knowing that and actually applying it, the purpose of it is to feel good, to feel that the divine right of being happy and joyous and free.
Right. Right. And the process that I'm talking about allows you to really feel connected to God.
Yeah.
And I think it's then that the process works the best.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
Right. So the benefit is that when you're connected, not only are you able to create, but you've created something spiritual.
Uh-huh.
You've not only created on the physical plane, you've created on the spiritual plane.
Absolutely.
And what do we want more than anything? We want a connection with our Creator.
Absolutely.
With the ultimate Creator.
Yeah. To feel that awesome, incredible love. You were talking, you have information about higher consciousness to aid the world in the coming transition predicted for the year 2012. What does the consciousness, do you think, has to do with all of this?
Well, it's a really interesting thing. The Jewish mystics have been saying for a long time that the world is going to have a transformation,
mm-hmm.
but they don't predict that it's happening for another 228 years.
Really?
Right. But I had been to a lecture about 2012, and I came back and I emailed a man that I know in Sfat, Israel. Sfat, Israel is it's a city that is known for it's like the center of Jewish mysticism. It has some of the most famous Jewish mystics lived in Sfat. And I know a man there who I was introduced to, and he's an artist,
mm-hmm.
a Kabbalistic artist, but he's a wonderful Kabbalist himself. I was told he would be the next great Kabbalist, and I often email him or call him when I have questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I emailed him, and I said, what do you know about this, and how does it relate to some information he had once given me? And So he said to me, you know, we've known this for a long time, that there's a transformation coming. But while it doesn't seem to correspond with the prediction of a transformation happening in 2012, you know, the year the Mayan calendar ends, he said, you know, we know that there's an evolution happening and that it's going to be it's happening already and it will be happening for a long time to come. So the Kabbalists, the way it was described to me, mm-hmm. like I said, is that it's already happening. So
right.
We know 2012 is the point on the Mayan calendar.
Right.
But what he said is we're already in the change. We're already in the transition, mm-hmm. and the transition will be happening even after 2012.
Right.
So the way the Kabbalists put it is, he said they liken it to the Jewish calendar and the world's spiritual evolution. They liken the Jewish calendar and the world's spiritual evolution to the 7 days of the week. So the Jewish calendar has the world at the year 5769 right now. That's the Jewish year, 5769. So the year 6000 equates to the end of the six work days of the cosmic week. So we have 7 days, right,
mm-hmm.
to the week, and we have six work days, and then we have the Sabbath, okay, or Shabbat, as it is in Hebrew. It's called Shabbat. So we have the six work days of the cosmic week, and then there's Shabbat, or the Sabbath. So he says, right now, it's as if the world clock has its hands at 12:30 p.m. on Friday, which is when Jews begin preparing for the Sabbath, because their Sabbath is on Saturday. Okay? So Friday evening at sundown is when the Sabbath begins. So at 12:30 p.m. on Friday, most Jews would be beginning to hurry to prepare for Friday evening. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So imagine that it's 12:30 p.m. on Friday when the Jews are beginning to prepare in earnest for the Sabbath. And at that time, the Kabbalists predicted that we would experience the time, the Sabbath, on the Sabbath, this great Sabbath at the year 6000. That's when we would experience this time called the world to come. And that would be likened to what other traditions have called the time of heaven on earth or peace on earth. So what they're saying is that we are at 12:30 p.m. on Friday before this big Sabbath.
Hmm.
And they aren't saying much that really is different from what the secular mystics are saying, in that they claim the world already is experiencing the early stages of the predicted changes in consciousness.
Right.
And that it will continue after 2012. But what they do say is that we can help with the coming transition in both this 4 years' time and in 228 years by raising the level of our consciousness and achieving a higher degree of connection with Source,
mm-hmm.
with God. And the more able we are to receive for the sake of giving, which means that we achieve this unity with God that I talked about,
mm-hmm.
the better able we'll be to help the planet and mankind through the predicted transition.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea basically is we know we're in a transition. Is it at 2012, or is it going to be at the year 6000? Maybe it's all the same. Maybe it's all just stages of the transition. But the idea is that this change in consciousness that I'm talking about,
mm-hmm.
is what we need. We need to find a way to raise our consciousness to where we have a unity with God, where we are able to connect with God so that we can help the transition.
Well, I think you're right in that there are so many groups of people out there all over the world, and I'm hearing about a lot of them, just like this gathering of one that's doing their major connection to God. And the angels, actually, on June 21st. But then there's all of these satellite places throughout the world who will be doing it specifically at the time that Montana is doing it.
Hmm.
So that's just one, but there's HeartMath. There's all of these connections. Lynn McTaggart's coming on and talking about the consciousness raising that she's doing on a scientific basis, because science has now agreed that, yes, your vibrations, when you do raise it up, it does shift the thinking or and can bring peace to a certain area. It's no longer mystical. It is now, today, it is now scientific documentation proof that this does work. And this is how we're going to bring about peace, where we're going to stop putting the responsibilities on governments and everything. The responsibility, in fact, comes back to us in our connection to everyone.
Right. There's a lot of scientific proof
so,
now.
Yeah, so I think you're what you're saying is right on target. There's more and more. Every day I'm finding out more groups that are coming together and putting these, and they're all divinely inspired. They're all similar, yet nobody knows each other.
Right. Well, the thing is that, you know, learning how to consciously create, we have to learn how to do it on a small scale first.
Yeah.
And then we can take it to a larger scale. So when you can create a little extra money in your life and you can create another car, you know, a car, and you can create a job and you can create a relationship, then you can work on creating, you know, a little more peace in your neighborhood,
right,
you know, or in your family. And then you can work on creating, you know, peace on a wider scale. Or you can begin work on, you know, creating this a different form of consciousness in the world or whatever it is, but you can create on a larger scale.
Absolutely.
But if you can't create in your own life, then you don't believe that you can create on a large scale.
Exactly.
And that's what I always say, you know, yes, we have to create things in our life first. We have to look at creating for ourselves alone first, because otherwise we don't know how to create on a larger scale. But we have to learn how to do it.
Absolutely.
And then we can help on a broader scale, and that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. Nope, you're right on target there. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
It is so important. And the spiritual aspect of it, again, is, I think, where this show, I mean, originally we started out and it was very materialistic. Okay, how do we go and do the car? But more and more people and guests that come on, it's like, oh my goodness, it is so fascinating how we are all tied into each other without knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And truly a mystical time. A wonderful, exciting time.
You know, it's interesting because most, you know, the Kabbalists I'm talking about, they all lived so long ago. And I write about the fact that, because people will ask me, well, is it okay to create the car and to create more money? And what did they have to say about that? And, you know, they said that you all, on the one hand, you were never supposed to pray for your livelihood. And prayer is no different. I mean, most of our prayers tend to be petitionary prayers. Please, God, give me whatever it is I need, right?
Right.
You know, better health, more money, a job, whatever. And, you know, on the one hand, they said it's not okay to pray for your livelihood. But on the other hand, they said you should pray for your livelihood every day. Why? Because you don't want to be stuck in survival for the rest of your life. What do you want to do? You want to have a livelihood that allows you to provide for your family, for, you know, to have a house, you know, a house and a roof over your head and money to pay for your food and to take care of your family, all those things, so that you can then have your spiritual pursuits. So that you can study, in their view, study Torah, study the Bible, you know, whatever it is, go on your spiritual path, pray to God, do all these things. Well, why? Because then you get connected to the One.
Mm.
You know, you don't want to spend your whole life stuck in this physical world looking at all the physical needs. You want to go beyond that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, you know, so they weren't saying anything any different. We all have materialistic needs because we live in a material world. But we don't want to stay stuck there.
Yeah. No, there's so much more.
There is, and that's not who we are.
Yeah.
It's not who we are. We are, you know, what do we all know? We're spiritual beings having, you know, what is it? We're spiritual beings having a physical experience.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I do know with, from what I'm seeing with the year 2012, and I do believe we're in it right now. We are shifting. But there are people who are actually levitating now. I mean, people who have been on the show, you know, it's really incredible the things that once we shift and once we start believing in the power that we have, which is God through us, there's incredible things that can happen. You can levitate. You can start you can start reading minds. You know, it is very paranormal. It is fantastic. So again, I'm really excited. But you know, we've got just about 1 minute left, and I want to make sure that everybody knows how to get in touch with you.
Okay. You want me to tell them about my website?
Please.
Okay. Well, I can be found at www.purespiritcreations.com, and that's the home for everything I do. And there you can sign up for my teleseminars. I have a new Kabbalah of Conscious Creation teleseminar starting at the end of the month.
Ooh.
And I offer those about every 5-6 weeks. And I also offer something called the Living Fully Challenge, 12 months to a fully lived life. And that's free, and you can find that on my website. It's got assignments and exercises to complete every month. I have my new booklet. So the old booklet, Abracadabra, the Kabbalah of Conscious Creation, is available on the website along with a workbook that goes with it. And the new booklet, the Kabbalah of Conscious Creation, How to Mystically Manifest Your Physical and Spiritual Desires, that's available. There's a free bi-monthly newsletter you can sign up for. All the other classes and teleseminars I'm running are always there on my calendar, so check the calendar. And what else? Booklets, workbooks, I think I said that. Coaching sessions. I do coaching sessions. Those are there. There's a resource section and articles and, oh, my goodness, there's all kinds of stuff. Sometimes there are free meditations. So everything you can think of is there on my website, which, again, is www.purespiritcreations.com.
Purespiritcreations.com.
Yep.
Wonderful. Wow. Well, thank you so much, Nina, for taking the time and coming on and talking to us. It's been absolutely fascinating. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, well, it was my pleasure. I really enjoyed it, and I was so looking forward to being here. And am I allowed to quickly tell them what today is?
Yeah.
Today.
Oh.
Can I?
Yeah, sure.
Today is Jewel's birthday, so I want to say happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank you. I totally forgot about it.
How could you forget? So I want to say happy birthday, and thank you for having me on your birthday, and I hope that it was a special gift.
Oh, it was. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I hope I gave you a gift.
You did. You did. A very informational one. I loved it. Absolutely. Well, that's all we have time for tonight. But to everyone, we'll see you back next week. And thanks again, Nina.
Oh, thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
You have been listening to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio, hosted by Jules Johnson. For more information, go to www.lawofattractiontools.com.